88.3 Southern FM.
You will have often heard claims of a day that the world changed. On this evening's The Space Show, we mark the 60th anniversary of a day that we think truly deserves that accolade. Of what do we speak? Well, here's a clue. Welcome to The Space Show, which is presented for Southern FM by members of the Space Association of Australia. Hello, I'm Andrew Rennie. Our program this evening is devoted to that music and the world-changing event that inspired it. 60 years ago, on 1962, July the 10th, a Delta rocket lifted off from Florida's Cape Canaveral. Minutes later, the satellite was in an orbit of perigee 952 kilometres and apogee 5,900 kilometres, circling the Earth every 2 hours and 37 minutes. Its name was Telstar 1. Next day, it relayed its first television pictures across the Atlantic. Not only its first, the first ever live television across the Atlantic. Almost 2 weeks later, a first live transmission was relayed via Telstar 1 to audiences in the United States, Canada, the United Kingdom, and the European countries belonging to Eurovision. Other broadcasts followed. The satellite was available to do this for up to half an hour at a time as it crossed the Atlantic Ocean. In 1962 August, it was used to synchronize clocks between North America and Europe to within 1 microsecond. Previously, the best time comparison had been 2,000 microseconds. In 1962, the idea of today's internet was but a science fiction fantasy. Yet, on 1962, October the 25th, the seed was sown. Telstar 1 carried data between two IBM 1401 computers from Endicott, New York to La Guarda in France. Although transatlantic television grabbed the public attention, the main task of Telstar 1 was telephony. Well, Telstar went out of service on 1962 November when radiation from high-altitude nuclear bomb explosions overwhelmed the satellite's fragile transistors. It was resuscitated for 1 month during 1963 January and February. Since then, it has been circling the Earth, a silent hulk. One of the millions who were enthralled by Telstar 1 was Joe Meeks. He was a man of many talents. These included record production, sound engineering, and a musician. He was also a songwriter. Inspired by Telstar and the sound of telemetry from satellites, he composed a catchy tune. Gathering together the members of the instrumental group The Tornadoes, he recorded his tune. Well, Meeks' tune was an immediate success. By 1962 December, it had reached number one in the United Kingdom's singles chart, where it spent 25 weeks. Across the Atlantic, it also reached number one in the United States Billboard Hot 100. Late in 1962, Meek produced a vocal version titled Magic Star, sung by Kenny Hollywood. We played that version on the Space Show in 2017. Many artists have recorded both the instrumental and the vocal versions of Telstar. One of them is by The Shadows. from the United Kingdom, The Shadows. In France, James Award and Les Scarlett recorded their version of the song Telstar. Don't forget that France was one of the key ground stations for Telstar. Now, let's stay in France. French composer Jean Ludruit accused Joe Meek of plagiarism, claiming that the tune of Telstar had been copied from La Marche d'Austerlitz. This was part of the score Ludruit had written for the 1960 film Austerlitz. In March of 1963, Ludruit filed a lawsuit, even though the film was not released in the United Kingdom until 1965. Well, the issue was not resolved until 3 weeks after Meek suicided in 1967. And Meek never received the royalties that was his due. So let's take a listen to this, The Marsh of Austerlitz, and we'll let you decide which version is right of the lawsuit. What do you think? plagiarism or an independent composition. Let's carry on. On 1963, May the 7th, a second Telstar satellite was launched, almost identical to Telstar 1. Because it was in a higher orbit, it was able to not only give longer transmissions across the Atlantic Ocean, it was able to provide a link between the United States and Japan. President John Kennedy had talked live via Telstar 1 in 1962. In November of 1963, he recorded this message to be sent via Telstar 2 over to Japan on November the 20th.
The President's videotaped remarks to be sent via Telstar to Japan from the Rose Garden of the White House, November 20th, 1963.
Ladies and gentlemen, gives me a good deal of pleasure through this first television transmission, the orbiting satellite relay, to extend a very warm greeting to the people of Japan, that we're able to speak simultaneously across the Pacific, which has appeared to many as a barrier rather than as a bridge, indicates how shrinking our world is and how important it is that we establish the most intimate relations between Japan and the United States, between Japan and the United States and other countries of the world. We've been attempting in recent months and recent years to make those ties more intimate. We met last May in Japan to discuss how our scientific communities could work more closely together. We met here in Washington with some of your leading scholars to discuss how we could have a greater understanding of our cultural traditions there in Japan, here in the United States. And now at this time, they're meeting in Japan to taking part on the economic study of trade and economic progress, a group of cabinet officers from the United States who are returning a visit of your cabinet officers who came here to the White House a year ago. In all these ways, we are working to strengthen the ties of friendship between Japan and the United States, ties of understanding. And I hope this quick communication by a satellite many thousands of miles away from us all will be a means of making our people live more closely together, bringing peace to them. To the people of Japan, I send the best wishes to the people of the United States for happiness, for prosperity, and for peace. Thank you.
And 2 days later, John Kennedy was murdered. Meanwhile, variants of Telstar kept on being recorded. This one by Trio Lewis, who loved to play the harmonica.
Thank you. on FM, online, 24/7. This is 88.3 Southern FM,
where you're listening to The Space Show. In the United Kingdom, Telstar made one place very well known to the public. That was Goonhilly in Cornwall. Now, this feature from the mid-1980s describes its history.
These British Telecom Earth stations at Goonhilly and Madley are part of one of the most complex machines ever made, the World Telecommunications Network, which enables the whole world to communicate more easily. Their job is to relay calls through space. Telephone, telex, telegrams, data, facsimile, television. It was the British inventor and writer Arthur C. Clarke who in 1945 originated the idea of a global network. Satellites hovering above the equator at a height of 22,300 miles. Their orbital speed exactly matching the rotation of the Earth. He saw that radio signals could be transmitted from one Earth station via a satellite to any other Earth station within the satellite's beam. On the way to the realization of this idea, there were some disasters, and there still are. After months of preparation, the total destruction in seconds of £25 million worth of satellite and launch vehicle. Even the first attempts at intercontinental communications met with fearsome hazards. Brunel's Great Eastern laying telegraph cable across the ocean for messages sent in Morse code. With Alexander Graham Bell came the first rudimentary telephone system. After Marconi, it was only a matter of time before the human voice was crossing the Atlantic by high-frequency radio. Then, by undersea cable, now a major part of the telecommunications machine. Cables gave much clearer and more reliable telephone calls and carried many more calls. For television and high-quality radio calls, there had to be a line-of-sight microwave system. Between America and Britain, the Earth's curvature makes this impossible. There'd have to be a great many relay towers, or one in the middle, 500 miles high. A little impractical. How was it to be done? Satellites in geostationary orbit. And how to get them up there? Konstantin Zilkovsky, a Russian school teacher born in the mid-19th century, worked out how to launch satellites by rocket, seeing in them a means to explore space. Rockets developed during the Second World War were the forerunners of the satellite launch vehicles of today. Cape Canaveral has been the scene of all the rocket launches by NASA for Intelsat, the International Telecommunications Satellite Organization, a consortium formed by 11 nations in 1964 to make Arthur C. Clarke's global network a reality. Intelsat now has over 100 member nations. The first satellites like Relay and Telstar in the early 1960s orbited the Earth at low altitude and could be used for only 20 to 30 minutes at a time. At that time, there were only three Earth stations. Andover in the USA and Puma Budu in France both had horn-shaped aerials with a protective radome. These proved expensive and less satisfactory than Goonhilly's open dish, which set the pattern for all future Earth stations. These experimental beginnings, with the information they supplied, led to the first attempts to place a satellite in geostationary orbit. Early Bird in 1965 was the start of a commercial service. Less than 2 feet high, it could handle 240 simultaneous phone calls or one television broadcast. Intelsat 2 in 1967 was bigger but similar in capacity. Intelsat 3 in 1968, 6 times as many circuits and nearly twice as big again. Intelsat 4, 1971, 4,000 circuits plus television and 17 feet high. Intelsat 4A, 1976. 6,000 calls, plus television, and 22 feet high. Intelsat 5, 1980. 12,000 circuits, plus television. Solar wings extend 52 feet across. The total number of satellites in orbit in the Intelsat system was then 13, with more and bigger ones to come.
Oh, she looks great. A real star.
I'll get on to our agent. Hi, get me Joe in New York. Yeah, Trina. Fantastic.
A satellite call goes from office to local exchange to international exchange. Then either by microwave radio from the London Telecom Tower or by coaxial cable to the Earth station. It's then transmitted by satellite to another country.
Hello? Yes? Oh, hello.
Intercontinental phone calls have grown dramatically, and two-thirds of them go through the satellite network.
Namaste ji. Tusi kidda ho? Theek ho? Bacche school chale gaye hain kahan nahi gaye.
Hello, Caboose or London?
However distant the country you're phoning, the call is often as clear as one within your own town.
Allah yisalmak. La'il jami'a bikhir. Isma, nahna l'usbu' al-jay. Okay, Nadim.
Advances in technology have helped in another way too. International calls were generally cheaper in real terms at the start of the 80s than when Early Bird went into orbit 15 years before.
Seychelles.
Is the Goonhillydown radio station of the British Post Office calling America. For us, this control room has tonight made history. Tonight, this equipment received perfect pictures from Telstar.
Good morning, Gene. Charles Booth speaking here. May I first congratulate you and everyone in the United States who has been concerned with the Telstar launch. It is indeed a wonderful achievement. And we in the United Kingdom know it represents a major step forward in communications. We are very proud to take a part.
Goonhilly has had many firsts. First to transmit live television from Europe to America via satellite. First in telephony tests. First to transmit color television. It's one of the busiest Earth stations in the world. A near-perfect parabola, its size and shape governed by its function, the dish focuses radio energy into a beam like a searchlight. The aerial is steerable and automatically makes imperceptible adjustments in tracking as it follows a beacon on the satellite, transmitting and receiving signals simultaneously. The incoming signal is only a tiny fraction of a watt in power, rather like the heat you might receive on Earth from a one-bar electric fire on the moon. After travelling from the aerial down a beam waveguide to the equipment below, the signal goes to a parametric amplifier designed to stop background noise swamping the incoming signal. Then, after more amplification and processing, the signal is translated to a lower frequency band and fed into the terrestrial network. These are some of the services that satellites help provide. Facsimile. Telex, automatic service to well over 150 countries. Telegrams worldwide. Data transmitted over ordinary phone lines. Phone calls dialed direct to over 100 countries by the beginning of 1981. International phone calls are doubling every 4 to 5 years. At one time, manned switchboards and exchanges were necessary for all international calls. Now, nearly all phone users in Britain can dial direct and to most of the world's telephones. Telephone and telex calls to ships at sea. Television. Many people don't realize that all our intercontinental television comes through a British Telecom Earth station.
4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Thanks to Mr. Churchill.
Honorary citizen of the United States. We are in the Rose Garden of the White House, just outside the President's office.
In proclaiming him an honorary citizen, I only propose a formal recognition.
Tom Hill, how is your reception?
Hello, Comstock. Freedom.
And whereas his bravery, charity, and valor, both in war and in peace, have been a flame of inspiration in freedom's darkest hour, and whereas his life has shown that no adversary can overcome and no fear can deter free men in the defense of their freedom, now therefore I, John F. Kennedy, President of the United States of America, under the authority contained in an act of the 88th Congress, do hereby declare Sir Winston Churchill an honorary citizen of the United States of America.
Tom Hill calling. Picture and sound both okay. BBC states clearest ever seen via transatlantic relay. Sir Winston observed the program at his London home and was deeply moved.
Goonhilly in Cornwall is built on foundations of hard rock. The space-age shapes of the aerials are features on the stark landscape. Landscaping and tree planting on the site blend with the surroundings. The aerial is silent, motionless, and there's no danger from pollution or radiation. At Goonhilly, Aerial 4, a 62-foot diameter dish, started tests in 1978 with a European Space Agency orbital test satellite, preparing the way for a European regional system. Later, the aerial was converted for use in the Intelsat system.
And that feature from British Telecom was made in the mid-1980s. Now back to the music about Telstar. This is by Camillo Felgen from 1962 in German with the title Irgendwann Erlwach ein Neiner Tag, which, excuse my pronunciation, but it means someday a new day will awake. And the lyrics are by Ulrich Blecher.
Schlagen einmal
feet of cold tide.
Southern FM, the sounds of the Bayside.
This is the Space Show, celebrating 60 years since the launch of Telstar 1. Robert Goff is the head of business development for the Australian and Asia Pacific area. He works with Goonhilly Earth Station Limited, which is in Goonhilly Downs, Helston, Cornwall, as we've heard in that feature before. In 2019, I caught up with him during a visit to Melbourne, and here's how our conversation went.
Thanks, Robert, for joining us on The Space Show.
Okay, it's a pleasure, an unexpected pleasure. I can give you background information about my association with Goonhilly over the years, if that's what you want, or yes. Whatever.
Yes, please.
Okay, I'll try and keep it reasonably brief. I'm an old guy, really old guy. And I used to work for the European Space Agency back in the 1970s. I was with them for 7 years. I'm a communication systems engineer, and I was involved in designing some of the very first performance telecommunications satellites for the European Space Agency. And as part of my role there, at one point, I was actually made responsible for the payload testing of a brand new Ku-band satellite called OTS, Orbital Test Satellite. And apart from setting all the equipment up, based in Ficino in Italy, actually, the test stations that we had to use to check the satellite's performance were located all across Europe, from down in the bottom right-hand corner of the Mediterranean, down to the Azores, up in Iceland, and lo and behold, Goonhilly Earth Station. So that's my first association with them, and those tests were very successful, actually. Then I left ESA, I moved back to the UK, and I set my own company up in the space business. We were doing tracking systems for pointing antennas at satellites, and we were doing digital modems. This is in the early 1980s. And Goonhilly Earth Station, which was then owned by British Telecom, BT, became a customer. So we supplied a lot of systems and software into Goonhilly over a long period of time. So I know the guys there. I've worked with them over years. And one of the first that we did that I remember, we developed my company, which was called Communication Systems Research Limited in the UK. We developed a digital modem, and that became part of the very, very first ever transatlantic telephone calls via Inmarsat satellites. So I have vivid memories of that. Development and putting it into Goonhilly Earth Station, and the test aircraft that was used was done by a company called Raykel, who did the airborne side of the modem, and lo and behold, it worked first time, and they spoke to each other, so as to speak. That was a real first, and that system, which was called Skyphone, went on, and it was adopted by Lufthansa, Singapore Airlines, British Airways, etc. Now, fast forward to the future, which is now, actually. And the development engineer, the very, very clever development engineer that worked for my company, his name was Ian Jones. And Ian and I worked on and off in various roles ever since the 80s then. But in 2014, Goonhilly Earth Station had pretty much been run down because the whole market had changed, the business had changed, and BT had moved a lot of facilities to other locations, and they were going to sell it. Well, Ian Jones, that engineer from way back, he went out in 2014, raised some money and bought the station. He bought it. Private company, so it's now privately owned by GES Limited, Goonhilly Earth Station Limited. And the site has been transformed since 2014. A lot of the large antennas have been completely revamped, upgraded. We're working with the European Space Agency on their Lunar Pathfinder mission, which is due for launch in about 2022. And that will put up to two small satellites in orbit around the Moon to act as the data relay satellites for a lot of experiments that will be going on actually on the Moon. And Goonhilly has won the contract for the Lunar Mission Support Services for that. So we'll be responsible for all of the command and control of the spacecraft and all the data coming back. So that's where we are now. We're expanding like mad. We had a very, very good set of capital investments last year, over $50 million. And we are setting up the world's first private deep space network with ESA and with NASA. And my job here at the moment in Australia is to set up the Australian station. And that's it. Okay.
Why was Goonhilly put where? Could you tell us, for those who are like me, who are slightly geographically challenged, where Goonhilly is and why it was located there and not in the middle of London?
Okay. Very simple. It was about the furthest point west that one could go in England. And the reason for that is that the initial satellites, the antenna design was fairly rudimentary. And the UK wanted to communicate with the States via, let's say, Telstar. And in order to get the right signal, acceptable signal-to-noise ratios for the link from the States to the UK and the UK back to the States, the stations needed to be located as close together as possible. So the US end of the link was on the east coast of the States, and the UK end of the link was on the west coast of England, which is Cornwall. So that's, in a nutshell, that's the reason.
So we've come a long way from Telstar.
Oh, we have come a long, long way from Telstar. And
what was the chief limitation of Telstar compared to OTS, which, of course, was the progenitor of the modern European communication satellite system?
Good question, that. Telstar probably only had one transponder. I don't know too much about it. I believe it operated at C-band, but I could be corrected on this, which is between 4 and 8 gigahertz, whereas OTS, for example, that was the first. There were two. There was an American satellite as well. But OTS was a completely European satellite development, and that operated at Ku-band, which is basically on the uplink is 14 to 14.5 gigahertz, and the downlink is 10.7 to 11.5-ish. Gigahertz, so very high frequency. And because the frequency was high, it meant that the antenna beam width, you could have spot beams on the satellite. With a high frequency, higher frequency and the same size dish, your beam width will be smaller, so you can get spot beams. And that means you can start to route traffic to different areas. You're not just limited with a global beam. So that was and there were a lot of technological developments that went on them. On the OTS satellite that really gave Europe a first at those frequency bands.
Well, thank you, Robert, for joining us on the Space Show.
Okay, it's been a pleasure. Actually, if you've got about another 2 hours of broadcasting time, I could tell you a hell of a lot about space.
So does everyone here. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Andrew. I really appreciate that. And it's been great seeing and meeting you here at the Space Conference in Melbourne. Thank you.
Thank you. And I was in conversation there with Robert Goff, the head of business development for Australian and Asia Pacific area. He works with Goonhilly Earth Station Limited. And yes, he could have told us a lot of stories, but we had to move on. Now, the low-orbiting Telstar satellites were superseded by the Intelsat satellites. Earlybird 1 was the nickname for Intelsat 1F1, which was the first commercial communication satellite to be placed into geosynchronous orbit in 1965, April the 6th. It was stationed at 28 degrees west longitude to provide transatlantic communications. During its 4 1/3 year of service, it provided the first live television coverage of a spacecraft splashdown, that of Gemini 6, in 1965 December. That was celebrated in music by André Brasseur in 1965. André comes from Belgium, and the track is simply called Early Bird Satellite. That was André Brasseur from Belgium, 1965, and that song reached number one in the Flemish chart and the top 10 in Germany and Austria. It sold over 6 million copies worldwide. Now, beginning in 1983, the name Telstar was revived with the first of the Telstar 3 series in geostationary orbit. The most recent launch was in 2018. On the original Tornadoes version of the tune Telstar, the guitarist was George Bellamy. Now, George's son Matt grew up to become the frontman of the English band Muse. In the Knights of Cydonia, Matt plays homage to his father by working in a guitar riff of Telstar. So listen close. Here is Muse. Muse with a tribute there to Joe Meeks. Well, let's see now what we can rustle up here. We've got I've got so many versions of Telstar you wouldn't believe. So let's see if I can go with this one, which is Rockin' to Telstar by Seas and His Skyliners. And I think I've got that in that. Yep, here we go. Now, do you agree with me that this date in history changed the world? Where would the world be without communication satellites? So there we have it, 1962, July the 10th. Telstar 1 was launched.